Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. If it's Wednesday, it's time for the True North Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Billy North. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, play a little co-host with him. 347-205-9631. This show goes quick, so catch the archive version if you don't hear it live on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast Platforms, where you subscribe to podcast powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay that red carpet down. Let him jump in the Maserati and hold the mic. First of all, Bill the Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're bringing a legend through that's pretty much worked for the Oakland Tribune for 47 years, my friend.
Hey, I am doing fine. I'm a happy man. Ain't mad at nobody. You can reach me at BillNorte15@gmail.com. BillNorte15@gmail.com. And my guest is somebody I go back a long ways with, and I want to talk about his book, and I also want to talk about the state of affairs in the town of Oakland. His name is Dave Niehaus. And the one thing I'll tell you as a player, he was always a fair writer, and we could go off the record and stuff. And sometimes when there wasn't anything happening, he'd come and say, "Bill, you got anything to say?" And I'd come up with something. Hey, Dave, how are you?
It's good to talk to both of you. How are things going up in the Northwest?
A little nippy today.
Well, I appreciate the promotion on the book. It's called Goodbye Oakland, Winning, Wanderlust, and a Sports Town's Fight for Survival. I co-authored it with Andy Dolich, a former Oakland A's executive. It's a 3-year project. There's 80 voices in there, including Bill North, who's in the introduction, and also in a chapter that delineates, you know, the greatness of the Oakland A's in the 70s.
Well, that's wonderful, Dave. Where is that going? How many books have you written, actually?
Well, this is number 19.
19. Wow. I looked at a thing in 2015. Or 2011, you had 10 books. And
I retired in 2011, and I finished a couple, and people started coming to me, "Can you help me with the book?" Or if I had an idea. When you're retired, you have time. And this book, it took 3 years, 80 interviews that Andy and I did. So there's time when you're retired. You can't cut the grass every day, right, or do laundry every day. So you got to do what you do best. And for me, that's probably writing.
Yeah. Where were you when I needed you?
Well, Bill, I didn't know that you were putting out a biography.
Well, I wasn't, actually, but I'm open to anything.
You know, it's amazing, Dave. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say something that Bill told me in the book, which is coming out April 11th, kind of commensurate with the start of the baseball season. And Bill said, "Did you know that I played my whole career with just one good eye?" And I thought, oh, my gosh, nobody knew that. And after he told me that, I called Vita Blue, his teammate, and he didn't even know. And Bill had really kept it a secret. I don't think the CIA knows. I don't think anybody knew except Bill, who showed that he's the best person in the world at keeping a secret.
Well, the thing is my high school teammates knew. It was our summer league team, and we were playing in Canada. And I was leading off second base when the guy stuck the ball in my eye. Yeah. But you know what?
You know,
I think it was one of the greatest things that happened to me because I wanted baseball a lot more when they said I can't do it. So, anyway, but Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here in awe talking to a legend that you brought through here, Bill. 47 years with the Oakland Tribune. It's just simply amazing. And, you know, it seemed like writing books, and 19 of them. I just was talking to Keith Thorney on the last show. We were talking. He's writing his seventh book, and you're up to 19. And I think it's remarkable because, you know, I lost a good friend last year to suicide, in Jeremy Giambi. And I know you lost your son in 2012, but book writing became a therapy for you. It's simply remarkable. You never lose thought of, you know, losing somebody, and you always reflect on it. But how did you get through to write all these books after that? I mean, I just think you just set a bar that's hard to accomplish, my friend.
Well, Mark and Bill, it's everybody has their, you know, their forte, and mine is writing. I mean, I've never won a Pulitzer Prize or a Nobel or anything like that, but I think I have a facility to turn a phrase. I think I write clearly. I would like to think that it's intelligent, but a lot of people might feel differently. But, you know, if you're going to write, you got to write just about every day. It's like, how does a concert violinist not practice all the time, even though he might be in somebody's symphony? It's a work of art, but it's work. And it's just like playing ball for Bill. You know, the off season comes, you just can't stop staying in shape or keeping your eye sharp or, you know, your reflexes nimble. You got to work at anything you do, and putting together your podcast, you know, you got to be thinking all the time about guests and how can we get people, and my gosh, we got to show this next, what about the week after? It's just a drive that consumes you at whatever endeavor you're involved in. I mean, that's all. I love writing, and what's interesting, I'm now in my 80s, and, you know, you challenge yourself even now to see if, you know, you can write a catchy phrase, if you can say something differently than what other writers might say, find a new way to phrase things. So that constant self-challenging, I think it keeps you on edge. And I'm very, you know, I'm kind of proud with some of the phrases that I came up in the book. I know I don't want to sound self-serving, but I just would like to, you know, to tell your listeners that whatever you're good at, you don't have to stop at it. If you reach a certain age, whatever,
it's a gift.
Whatever compels you, keep going.
Yeah, it's a gift, I think, and it's something that you've done very well on, and I appreciate our interviews even back in the day. I got a question about print journalism. You know, they used to call me the paper boy, my teammates, because whatever town we went into, I read newspapers, and I don't anymore, but Dave and I come from an era of print journalism. What do you feel about that era compared to now, Dave?
Well, there is no more Oakland Tribune, and there hasn't been for like 5-6 years. And it won a Pulitzer Prize going out the door. A lot of papers, you know, you hear about Elon Musk firing 40,000 people or 80,000 people, and you think, where do people go next? And with newspapers, they're closing down all over the country, and so they're going on the internet, where everything seems to be going these days. You know, when I was
Pied Piper.
When I was writing, there were no apps. I don't even know what an app is. But now there's so many particulars that go into print journalism. You have to work extra hard because it's now a 24-hour cycle. With the Oakland Tribune, it came out in the afternoon, then it came out in the morning. It changed its delivery time, but It's so much more complicated now, Bill. I really don't know how a question like yours can be answered. It's really tough. If you think you have a breaking story at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you never know what's going to go on the internet at 11 o'clock that night that make your breaking news an old story by then. So it's a 24-hour cycle, and I don't know how journalists even sleep today.
Wow.
Oh, that's right. They don't.
Well, yeah, and you know that. Do you ever reflect on it? Because, you know, Dave, when you look at it, I can go back to Nate Thurman, Rick Barry, the Warriors, playing the Washington Bullets for the NBA championship. I can go back to the heydays of the Raiders and Al Davis, and you got the A's, the swinging A's, putting California on the map, winning three titles in a row. I mean, you know, you get the San Jose Sharks coming in and doing, you know, as far as hockey, with Wayne Gretzky bringing. I mean, do you ever reflect on any of these stories in Northern California? And was there one that stood out more so than another, whether it was football, basketball, baseball, maybe even hockey, with the California Golden Seals?
Well, the greatest moment I ever saw, I've seen a lot of it. I saw Dwight Clark's catch. But the one thing that stood out for me, because it seemed so impossible, and it involved the A's post Bill North, but is when Gibson hit the home run off Eckersley. I mean, he lived up to the plate. It was going to be his only bat the whole series. And every pitch that Eckersley was throwing him, he was falling. It looked like he was falling down. It was sad to watch. And then X moved something on the outside corner, and with one arm,
he yanked it out of there.
He hit it halfway up bleachers in right field. I was stunned. I've seen, like I said, I've seen a number of great things. Bill's seen them too from his perspective, but I've never seen anything like that. But as far as the A's highlights, Mark, they're all in the book. There's a whole chapter when the Raiders, the A's, and the Warriors all won championships in the 70s. It was a great time for Oakland, and now Oakland lost its baseball, lost its football team, it lost its basketball team. The Raiders have left twice, and now the A's are on the cusp of going to Las Vegas. And if that happens, Oakland's got the hat trick. It's been shut out three different ways.
You know, I take that, Dave, as a kind of, I have, that's one of my things. Because I love the city of Oakland, and I know you do too. And we were kind of neighbors. I lived up in the hills in a place called Montclair, and Dave was up in there too. But the fact that baseball is talking about leaving there is to me, it's a societal problem. And because Oakland is a town that baseball could make or break, in the fact that it could, if they stayed there and they built that new stadium, they could bring in different companies, big companies that could make the town flourish. But in the long run, if they leave, I don't know what the future of Oakland would be.
It's strange, Bill. In the last 10 years, aside from sports, Oakland has gone through kind of a rebirth. There's the economy burgeoning here. New companies are coming in. We have two Art Deco theaters. They've done a lot of renovation. Oakland has a lot of charm, but it's always portrayed as San Francisco's ugly stepsister. San Francisco's across the bridge, you know, and it's the town of song and movies, and when movies come out about, books come out about Oakland, it's always negative. This book that Andy and I have written, we're trying to present a true picture of Oakland. You know, it's a lovely place to live. I have deer on our streets. Yes, we do live in Montclairville, and Mark. There's wild turkeys in the hills. Raccoons are, you know, attacking our cats and dogs. it's Lake Merritt is a lovely lake that's ringed by lights. Oakland has beautiful hiking trails in the hills. The weather is better here than in San Francisco, but we're stigmatized. We're stigmatized by being so close to San Francisco. And it's a rough go for Oakland. And as I just said, I hope our book will be a definitive read on what Oakland is really like.
Yeah, it's a good town. It's a good town. I had some of my best times ever. Yeah.
Well, you know, and not only that, you know, when you look at it, this is the mind-boggling thing with the Oakland A's moving out of there, which I think is inevitable, guys. But I've always said, how do you take a team that's been in a city, and I looked at the Seattle Supersonics were there for 30-something years, and then somebody comes in, buys it, and lets them move it. There should be something put into the relocation here that if you're going to buy a team, you can't move and carpet bag this team out. I can remember years ago, and you both probably remember this, the Pirates in the 80s were on the verge of going to Denver before the Rockies went there, and I said, how the hell do you just take a team that's been in a city 100-something years, only the Cincinnati Reds have been in a city longer? And that's the thing when I look at the tradition of the Oakland A's, how do you carpet bag that and move that out of Vegas, Dave and Bill?
Well, Mark, I'll tell you this. To use the right word, carpetbagging. And I think I've always kind of felt what I'm about to tell you, but through the research for this book, I think sports ownership, they're just a fraternity of carpetbaggers. It's terrible. When they voted 33-1 the second time around to move the Raiders out of here, they're only voting that way to protect themselves. If you don't build somebody a new stadium or ballpark every 20 years, they threaten to move. And most of the ownerships don't put any money in. They expect you to put the money in. Well, here's the crux in Oakland. I'm going to give away a big part of the book. I hope it won't help listeners or prevent listeners from buying it. But the Port of Oakland is like the sixth largest port in the country. It's not written about much because who writes about the port? But it stretches all the way to China. It's 84,000 jobs in the entire chain, and it goes 24/7. Well, where they're proposing to build the new ballpark, it kind of juts out into what is known as the Oakland Estuary.
Mm-hmm.
That's an extension of San Francisco Bay, and you guys could swim across it in 15 minutes. It's so narrow between Oakland and Alameda. But the biggest thing I found out in this book research was cargo ships come into Oakland to dispose of and pick up materials. And if the ballpark does extend out into the bay, these ships can't turn around. What that would do to Oakland's commerce would be more hurtful than losing a sports team. Because as I said, Oakland's on the economic upgrowth. And the thing about the Coliseum where Bill played, you know, and it's changed some, Bill, in that BART, you know, the rapid transit system goes by one side. There's a railway on a second side, a freeway on a third.
Right next to it, yeah.
Yeah, two giant parking lots, and the airport is 5 minutes away. It's the most perfectly located stadium in the country, stadium complex, I should say. But ownerships want you to build something new for them. And so building it out on Jack London is terrible. Jack London Square, which abuts the estuary that we just talked about, it's unfathomable that they could do something like that. But that's what always seems to happen to Oakland. Somebody always seems to have its thumb on it.
Well, you know what? I love it anyway, and I want the best for it. I spent 20 years in Oakland and living, and it's one of my favorite towns. It is my favorite town in the country. I got a question, Dave, on a quote, on a thing that you said. I think it was in the book about, what was his name, Slip, the St. Mary's coach?
Oh, that's another book of mine, Slip Madigan?
Yeah. It said, you said, all stories are human. Detailed and diligent research told with sensitivity. Can you expound on that?
Well, I think sports have become more hard-boiled. I really do. It's the fan seems now to be the last sentiment, and what an ownership wants. Ownership wants, they want big sponsorships. They want to charge more and take away more from the fans. I think parking at the Oakland Coliseum is up around $35-$40 for one event, and it used
to, wow.
Yeah, it used to be $10 or less. So there isn't a sensitive feeling towards the fan, as evidenced in Oakland. The Raiders moved. It didn't work out in Los Angeles as they thought it would. They came back to Oakland. Oakland renovated the stadium and made it a worse place for baseball. It never really was a baseball facility, but there was a life out in the bleachers. They had a concession stand out there. People would get a suntan. I don't remember if you remember Dave Henderson from the playing up in the Northwest. Well, he was known as Hendu, and there was a club called Hendu's Bad Boy Club, and they loved him, and they would just sit in the outfield from where he played,
right,
cheer him on. And one night after a game, he went out and had beers with him. It was that kind of friendship that you don't always find in other cities. You could, after a Raider game, the players would come out to the parking lot and bond with the fans and have a few brews or some food to eat, and it was a great relationship. But for some reason, Oakland always gets stigmatized as not a very good town for sports, and I think it's a shame.
Yeah. Well, I just know this much is that I could get in trouble around the ballpark as good as anybody. Yeah.
Well, you don't have to reveal stories, Bill.
I'm not. I learned. It's good. How
well, let me ask you, Dave, and I know we're down to like 7 minutes. As far as interviews, I always look at, doing radio 18 years and blessed enough to do television for 4. But when I look at, the toughest interviews, there's only like 3. And then I was blessed enough to get a Deion Sanders or a Barry Bonds, and people said, well, no, they're impossible to get. But you always remember the toughest. And a Kenny Lofton could have been a tough one for me, a Charles Barkley. Just, you got to get the interview now or you're going to lose it. So it's one of those. Was there any ones that stood out as far as maybe your best interviews, a top 2 maybe or top 3, and maybe the toughest? Because I always remembered sitting down with John Candelaria, and John Candelaria to me was unbelievable, a great interview, my tops. But talking to a guy that's been in the business for so long and, it's, like I said, has set the bar that high, what was your toughest and what was your best?
Well, I think, let me answer it this way. I think the most accessible player to interview was Dave Stewart. Win or lose, Stu would stay at his locker. You know, now you go into the clubhouse after a game and all the players are in the food room eating. and if
off limits.
If you got it, yes, it's off limits. And if you have a newspaper deadline a half an hour after the game's over, sometimes there's nobody to talk to. I mean, newspaper people, you know, they're not high paid like radio and television personalities, but they got to make a deadline. Deadlines are the thing that'll kill you in the business if you can't make them. But Stu would always be at his locker. And another guy was Dennis Eckersley. Even after the home run to Gibson, he stood at his locker and took the questions. And I want to tell you a story that a few years later, he was still with the A's, and I was interviewing about something. And he said, they're showing it again. I said, what are you talking about? Look over your shoulder. And I looked over my shoulder, and on the TV screen, they were showing the home run that Gibson hit off him. And I said, Eck, how can you even watch it? I mean, it's just so devastating. And he said, you know, when that happened, it was my first year as a reliever. Maybe Bill can understand this. And
yeah, I do. I
wasn't quite tuned to what I was supposed to be. I was just a reliever. But he said a couple of years later, I gave up a home run to, what were the brothers' name? He played for Toronto. Alomar, Roberto Alomar.
Yeah.
And he said, when that happened, I went home and I cried. So in that one instant, he told me that whole story, watching the Gibson home run on the screen. You know, there were athletes that there weren't fun to be around. I was able to talk to Barry Bonds, you know, but a lot of guys didn't. I talked to John Rucker, but nobody was getting an interview. But what I did was I walked up to him and I said, John, do you automatically turn down all interviews? That was my first thing. He said, no, not usually. I said, well, I've got a question and answer format here, and everything you say will get in the newspaper. I won't cut anything out. It's just you're going to do the talking. And he said, all right, give me a half an hour. And in a half an hour, he gave me a great interview, and all the writers that were covering his team, I think Red Sox, and they were wandering around, how did I get that interview?
Yeah.
Well, I tried to approach it from a human side.
Yeah.
You know, just be human. You know, don't be threatening. And that's the way I've always tried.
Don't be the adversary. And I know that you, the way that, and I've always appreciated the way that you come to me. And you know, you might have called me an asshole.
No, I never did.
After you left, but you know, I always felt comfortable with you, and there were times that we talked, and I trusted you, and that's the thing that an athlete. What was the guy's Lyle Spencer? Was it? Do you remember him?
Yep, hey? California. Yes, I do.
He stabbed me in the back so cold. Told me my mama would be. I told me that I wasn't a Christian, and I said,
wow.
Well, you better be good. The one that would be least a godlike would be Bill North. And it was the kind of thing that I said, you know what, if my mama heard you say that, you'd really have a problem. But, you know, it was a kind of thing that you earned.
Yeah.
The ability to be able to approach players because you weren't a guy that tried to make a story. Make a negative story and that. But you did tell the truth, and you didn't always write good about me now. But I appreciated the fact that you know, as I got older, I said, okay. and I'll go with it. But I appreciate how your integrity and your character and how you wrote. And I appreciate that.
All right. That's nice of you to say, Bill. I never went into an interview trying to hurt someone. But I'll tell you the worst. If I have time, the worst experience was, I just remembered, was Jeff Burrows. He was a former MVP, I think, with the Rangers.
Came to
the A's. Yeah, and so I wanted to do an interview with him, and I always wrote down questions before I approached someone. Sat down to interview him and introduce myself, and every answer was yes, no, this.
No.
And he was putting me through the ringer. And when I went back and wrote it, I wrote it the way he said it, you know, yes, no, and I tried again, and you know, and it just didn't work. And there was another writer listening in the dugout. He says, you know, I listened to your questions. They were really well thought out. He was just out to denigrate you or something like that.
That did happen,
but most of the time, if athletes felt you were treating them fairly, I think you would get the benefit of the doubt.
No doubt. And we're out of time, but you know what? On that note, I can go along with that one because I remember interviewing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I think he burned 10 questions in a matter of a minute. But then Tony Gwynn covering the Padres in 96, 97, 98, I'd have 5 questions, and I'd only get through one of them for about a half an hour talking Indiana Pacer basketball with him. So we can go all night. We just appreciate it, Dave. We got to get him back here, Bill. I mean, you're bringing a cachet of great guys here through, and 30 minutes just ain't long enough, as the listeners have piled up here. But
I have to mention the fact that Dave has been married for almost, was it 60 years?
Wow. And I've been married 58 years.
58 years. And I just want to say hi to Patsy.
I'm 21 years behind that, but some people don't stay together 60 days. Forget about 60 years. But happy Valentine's to you, a belated one out there for you guys. Bill, as we wrap this up, how can we get a hold of everybody? How can we sell him more books?
Well, the name of the book is Goodbye Oakland. Look it up. Because the writer is somebody that is very informative and will give you a perspective. Pick the book up.
And the publisher is Triumph Books, if anybody needs to know that. Triumph Books.
I think when we bring him back here, I got to find out how come my Pittsburgh Pirates did not meet you guys in 72 or 1974 for a World Series, and then we would have had one hell of a game going here. But that'll be a story for another day.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. That's Dave Newhouse. That's Bill Nord. Here's truly Mark Mancini saying thanks for everything, guys, across the board and making us a mainstay here on Wednesday nights. Have a blessed one. We're back same time, same channel next week. Good night, everybody.